You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills.
Hi, I'm Bills defensive end Greg Russo, and you're listening to Nate and the Fellas on Circling the Wagons podcast on the Buffalo Rumblings podcast network. Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills. Go Bills!
Welcome to the Circling the Wagons podcast, a podcast discussing the Bills all year round with interviews, news, recaps, and insightful fan discussion. Most times. Here's your host and lifelong Bills fan, Nate.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Circling the Wagons, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast. I am your host, Nate. Thank you so much for joining us in another off-season episode. We are talking with Andrew and Justin from the Wandering Buffalo podcast on the Bills Fan Base Podcast Network, the official podcast network of the Bills Mafia. Guys, we haven't talked in a little while. I'm so glad that we can finally get to catch up this off-season before one of the most important off-season, one of the most important seasons in possible recollection. How are you guys doing?
I guess I'll go first here. I am doing great. And what an intro. Thank you for having us on this podcast. And yeah, expectations sky high. And every day that passes on, and it's like another day for the regular season. And I'm just like ready. I'm getting more antsy. I'm like looking for the day that training camp starts so I can just call off for work for whatever nefarious reason. So I can just go see Josh Allen or who, whatever, like fifth string wide receiver or something like that. I'm just ready for Bills football.
What about you, Justin? You ready as well as Andrew is?
Oh, for sure. I have a wedding coming up in August, which is going to be right around the time that we're getting, you know, the Fisher training camp practices. So I'm waiting for those days to come out to see, you know,
his wedding, by the way.
If I got to, yes, you know, rearrange some things, if I got to dip out of the setup early.
Tip out of the setup for the wedding, you mean? Like the day of, or like?
Yeah, I mean, we'll figure it out.
What's that movie where they use like a body to like?
Oh, Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah, we'll just have to Weekend at Bernie's it. Superimpose your face on someone.
Call up Josh Rosen and see what he's up to. He can fill in for me for a couple hours.
That's awesome. Man. That's awesome. I forgot to mention before the podcast that you guys are like my Rochester podcast buddies, because most of the people I talk to are in Buffalo or other parts of the country, even. Like a lot of people that have Bills podcasts in general are not in Buffalo. I'd say actually the majority of them aren't in Buffalo, which is kind of crazy if you think about it. But like us, we don't live in Buffalo, but we're close by. I wasn't even going to talk about training camp specifically being in Rochester, but I got to be honest, after it not being here for a couple of seasons, like I'm looking forward to it. I usually take off at least one day of work to go down and see. They're usually like one of the first days just so I really get to see the action. And the good thing about it is when you go on a day that's like a weekday and you take a day off, like there's so many less people right there. You get to get a little bit closer. Maybe it won't be that way because we haven't had training camp here in a long time. I'm excited. Are you guys as excited, or do you not even care that, like, and I'll start with you on this one, Justin, training camp's coming here to Rochester? First of all, I didn't think it would ever come back here. I've got to be honest. I thought they were going to be like, this is the way it's going to be, and we like it this way. I can see McDermott being a control freak and being like, I don't like it being outside of Buffalo, but I'm happy it's here. Are you surprised at all that it came back, and are you, I guess as excited as I am. I mean, I know you mentioned you're going to rearrange your, your wedding for it, but but I mean, I guess, are you surprised that it's coming back in general, having seen it, you know, a bunch of times when it was here?
Yeah, I'll start there, and I'll say I'm super surprised that it's coming back, and I did that like classic, you know, Bills fan mentality of like, I talked myself into, you know, it's better that it's in Buffalo. They have the training facilities and invested in all that. Like, it's better for them to stay there. We'll be better because of it. And then they announced that it was coming back, and it was like right away, right back on board with it. The thing is, being out in Buffalo, I still went to, I think last year I did three of them. The year before that would have been COVID, so they weren't really open. But the Fisher atmosphere is so much different than being out in Orchard Park. And the Orchard Park, you know, you're sitting in the stands, they're on the field. We went for the scrimmage last year. Like, it's still really cool. It's fun seeing, you know, the preparation, everything that goes into it. But how many autographs and players and stuff I've met being at Fisher. I have like a press pass lanyard that I got the one year I went there. My buddy got us into the, like the VIP section, and it's just littered with autographs of people that were off the roster by the end of that training camp. But like, it was still a cool experience. Met Jordan Poyer there, and wow. It's just the intimacy of the St. John Fisher atmosphere that it's not really duplicated in Buffalo. You know, they do different things where you can get there early, and some of the players are in the field house and all that. But like the year I met Jordan Poyer, it was kind of like all the players went off to one side and went to like the press area and like the VIP ticket area, and they're signing autographs and whatever. And Poyer was the last guy on the field, and he was just, you know, doing the running in place and catching balls from somebody. And he went to start walking that way, and he saw this whole group of us peasants over here along the fence. And he like kind of did a double take at the VIP area, and he was like, I'm going to go over here. And just right down the line, there's probably about 150 people or so, but he stopped at like each and every person.
Wow.
And it's just something that you get at the Fisher experience that I didn't really experience in Orchard Park.
Wow. Yeah, you've never really told me that story like that. So that's pretty awesome. You know,
I was saving it for today.
Yeah, it was just like, oh yeah, I got an autograph from Jordan Poyer. That was pretty cool. I was like, all right, sweet.
I'm basically the godfather to his daughter, essentially.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're going to kick it this weekend.
Miami.
Yeah. I mean, I've gone to a couple training camps when they were at St. John Fisher. I was going to go to the one in Orchard Park, but then I got COVID. And I actually got tickets with Justin. My girlfriend had like, I got them for free or whatever. So I was like really hyped about that. I was like, all right, me, Justin, our significant others, we're just going to get in a car, go watch Josh Allen toss around the pigskin. He just got that big contract. Expectations were high. And then I wake up like a morning or two right before it, and I was like, oh, you know, this doesn't feel right. Like, so
I went without you.
Yeah, I was like, do it for the pod, man. Just go out there, have fun. And all the videos that you sent, I was extremely jealous, and I was feeling like crap in multiple ways.
I'm here to help.
Yeah, but no, I would agree that I for selfish reasons, I'm very excited that training camp is back in Rochester. And one point, and correct me if I'm wrong here, so when training camp was out in Buffalo, they would have it on the field, and then they would also have it inside, right? Like in their indoor turf area. Is that correct? They would sometimes split what they would do. Am I wrong? Right?
Whatever ones I went to in Orchard Park, they were in the stadium itself.
Okay.
So like, Diggs went around like the whole outside of the stadium and like threw balls into the crowd and whatnot. But like, you still have that, the sideline and, you know, the height of the stands, like it's just so much more of a barrier than standing along a chain link fence. Like, okay, you're at a high school game.
Okay. I was going to say, like, I could have swore that I heard that sometimes they would have, I mean, weather permitting, they would have like practice inside and or whatnot. And I was going to say one benefit of it being at St. John Fisher is that it just sounds like there's a lot more space for them to do more activities, except, you know, in Orchard Park, it's the field. But in St. John Fisher, like, there's multiple fields and it's spread out pretty nicely. So there's more content to just like soak in. If you don't want to see Matt Hawk over here, you can just
anywhere,
you know, turn and just like go to like the kid zone and just like mess around there if you're so inclined. But there's a lot to do if you don't want to watch a certain like position group or whatever, if you have kids, or if you want to just go shop, there's that opportunity too. But I do, again, I really like how it's back in Rochester because it's closer for me. And like you said, all signs were basically pointing, all right, the Bills are never going to have a training camp back here in Rochester. The contract between the St. John Fisher and the Bills, it's just kind of palms in the air. We don't know what's going to happen. They just invested a crap ton, exactly one crap ton of money into that new facility where they're like showing it off to free agents. And everyone's like, oh my God, look at this facility. I like this. And I'm like, oh, that's it. Training camp's over. Like,
yeah, why wouldn't you want to have access to that facility for what, roughly a month and a half or so, while the guys are a month or so or whatever it is while the guys are in training camp at St. John Fisher? You know, St. John Fisher doesn't have the same capabilities in their training center. Exactly. I agree. Mm-hmm. I love the St. John Fisher training camp, and I never went to the Buffalo one, but from what you mentioned, I mean, yeah, there is two fields there that you can use, 100-yard line fields. I don't know if you have access to the far field unless you have a press pass. Am I correct in saying that? Have you guys ever been able to go over there? Because I've never been able to. And I remember thinking like, oh, how come we can't? Why are they sending the special teamers over here? Send Josh Allen over to this side, mm-hmm. you know, for now. I want to see him the whole time. I don't want to see him, you know, over on that side working on running plays. I want him over here. Have you guys noticed that or anything?
I think you're right, but one nice benefit is that they do have the football stadium or seating or the bleachers, so you can go high up. So you can, I mean, you can't get like sideline view of it, but you can just get up and just like watch what they're doing from a bird's eye view.
So I wanted to talk about, since we're on the training camp train of thought, Justin, you mentioned like one of your most favorite memories, and I'm going to come back to you in a second in case you have a better one. But Andrew, I mean, you mentioned you've been there a few times. Do you have like a favorite or special memory of being there, like seeing someone play, doing something? You mentioned how like close you can get to these players. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think that can be overstated enough, because it's a high school state. That's exactly what it's like. Like, you're within 10 feet of guys doing drills in the end zone. Like, mm-hmm. whether it's blocking drills or whatever they're trying to do, like, you feel like, I guess I've been there before, and this is like, you know, I've been doing it since I've been out of college, right? And I moved back to Rochester. Like, I've been taking days off every year for the most part just to go see them. And I remember one year we took a half day. We went golfing in the morning. We made a day of it. We went to, you know, lunch, and then we went up to St. John Fisher for the 1 p.m. training camp practice or whatever it was that day, on a Tuesday or whatever. Mm-hmm. And watching even Robert Royal, like, you know, the tight end at the time, doing blocking exercises, and I'd be like, oh my God, like, this guy is massive. He's a 6'6" tight end, right? 260 pounds or whatever he is. And you just forget how big these men are.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Cause they're always on the field with other big men. So you have nothing to, you know, they need people like us just standing out there and be like, oh, that's how ginormous, you know, Ed Oliver is, or whoever, you know, like Greg Rousseau, like how much he just towers over normal human beings. But anyway, going back to training camp stories, Andrew, do you have any that you remember happening, or anything specifically, or player or play or anything that you remember from watching a St. John Fisher?
Oh yeah. There's one player that stood out to me, and might not get a lot of praise here, but I remember when we drafted Sammy Watkins, and he came in. And obviously, when you trade up and to get this guy, like, the hype of him was real. Like, everyone's like, oh my God, Sammy Watkins, like, this guy, a lot of expectation was on this guy. And I remember there was a specific drill. I forgot who was throwing the ball, probably EJ at the time. And I forgot who was playing him on defense, and he just one hand like eclipsed this football, just like sucked it up like just right into his hand, and I was like, oh my God. Like, and it was just blatantly obvious that he was just so much better than everyone else at the team at the time. And then, you know, obviously when he started like the regular season, he had a pretty good rookie season, all things considered, with the injuries. And the year after that, still pretty good in my opinion. But again, the injuries and then the fit and then, you know, everything else came where eventually he didn't end up staying in Buffalo. But I do specifically remember that one catch and just thinking to myself, like, I have trouble like catching car keys when my girlfriend passes it to me. So like the fact that this man can just suck up a ball with one hand easily is just baffling to me. Like these guys are so good at their craft. And I do want to tell you this quick story. So I used to intern at Great Lakes Medical Imaging out in Buffalo when I lived there, and they're direct partners with the Buffalo Bills and Sabres. I can't, for HIPAA reasons, I actually legally can't tell you who I saw, but it was an offensive lineman and a well-known one. And I am not lying to you. This guy had to duck consistently through this like facility, and we had like crazy high ceiling. Like he was, it seemed like he was like 4 feet taller than me, even though he really wasn't, because I'm like 6 foot, and like I was really just like baffled on how large this human was. And I was like, is he even gonna fit in the MRI? Like I just don't think this is gonna happen. But somehow he did. But it was just, it's just a good reminder, especially when you get to training camp, just to see how good these people are and how even like undersized, and I'm using air quotes here, how undersized NFL players compared to the average human being, because these are not average people.
It's like, have you ever seen that tweet that comes up every Olympics where it's like, for every single race, they need to have an average person racing alongside with these Olympians so you can really just get a grasp.
Give me some context.
Give me some context. You just need to know. They just need this guy that's just like us, like, you know, trying to run a 100 meter and just see how far they are behind. But yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Justin, was there another story or anything else that you wanted to add to that? Because I know you mentioned that really cool story with Poyer.
Yeah, the Poyer one was probably my favorite training camp story, along the lines of like players that we've run into in our lives and whatnot. When I did live in Buffalo, I worked when I was probably around like 18 to 20 range. I worked for a company that did like high-end electronics. So over the course of my tenure there, I was able to meet a few players. I met wide receiver Josh Reed, John McCargo came in, Marshawn Lynch. But the one that always stands out to me, and I mean, we're talking 15 years later, I still tell people this story. Paul Posluszny came in, and it was either the year we drafted him or the following year. And, you know, being a diehard Bills fan, I see Paul Posluszny walk in the door, and I'm like, the only one that recognizes him, and I'm like boogieing out the door to take care of him. And he had a TV that had to get looked at, and he pulls up in this giant, like decked out, I think it was a Nissan Titan pickup truck, whatever. And we're talking to him, and he's like, yeah, TV's in the truck. Are you guys going to grab it? And I'm thinking, you know, we're talking about the size of these players. He was, what, like 6'5", like, I don't know, 270, whatever he was. And I'm a little guy, and I was smaller then. So I was probably sitting at like 5'8", 130. And I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll carry your TV, bud. But yeah, I was fortunate to, in that job, have met quite a few players. And I will say, meeting Josh Reed, who was the receiver back then, one of the nicest, coolest guys I've ever met. And he's the type of player that also has the other end of the perspective where, like, he walked in the door and looked like he could have been you know, any random guy walking in and then, you know, see John McCargo walk through the door and his hands are like three times the size of mine when he goes to shake it and I just get lost in his hand. So unrelated to training camp, but we kind of went on a tangent of some of the players we met, and I like that Paul Posluszny story.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. It's funny that it makes me think, because you guys mentioned like six or seven different players there, and like all of them I've just kind of forgotten in the recent memory. Like Josh Reed, like I remember thinking like Josh Reed is going to be a really good player for us, and you know, just never panned out long term. I mean, he was still good in the short term, but I mean, I remember. So I have a couple of training camp stories. One is I was there for the day that when the Bills drafted EJ Manuel, they also had Kevin Cobb, and I was at training camp the day Kevin Cobb slipped on the mat.
No,
that was all me. I put that into motion. No, but
you
it was
the catalyst.
I was the catalyst. I'm like, what? We were just waiting for the guys to come out of the tunnel in between the areas. I think it was between the two fields, and there were mats down. It had recently rained, and all of a sudden, like everything just kind of stopped. Like as far as like, you know, players coming from one side to the other, and everyone's like, "What's going on?" Like it's usually a pretty fluid process. Now, I will say, depending on the coaching staff, it was more fluid than others. But like, you know, just waiting for, you know, him to come along, it was definitely a scene, and we're just like, "What happened?" And I think that was, I mean, Twitter existed then, but it wasn't what it is now. So I don't think I even had a Twitter account at that point. Maybe I did. But like, you know, you're like, what the heck's going on? Like what's, you know, people are texting each other. Did you find out what happened? You know? So anyway, I was there for that. I was at a VIP tent once from my friend who works for a company in Buffalo that like, you know, they got bussed over there from Buffalo. Of course, it's like a drinking bus, right? They're coming all the way over from Buffalo there. I'm meeting him there. He lets me in. And like, I was able to meet a bunch of different players through that venue, which was cool, but not like a normal person, not like a normal peasant like I normally am at these functions, right, where it's just you just hope to see that. But yeah, it's cool. I will say, going back to the point about like different coaching staffs, like I remember seeing like Dick Geron's training camp before Doug Marone. I always liked Chan Gailey, but there mm-hmm. always seemed to be people just standing around. And when Doug Marone took over, as much as a tight ass as he seemed to be, or whatever you want to call him, like mm-hmm. there were always guys moving, like always things being done. If you're not doing this, like, you know, you're doing this. It didn't just seem like a lot of just standing around. And I think that's one of the things that Chan Gailey kind of lacked a little bit. Doug Marone brought structure, but he brought like overbearing structure, right? But like yeah. since then, I've seen most coaches attack that the same way that Doug Marone does, which I'm sure you wouldn't be surprised to see that, you know, Sean McDermott does it the same way. But I also remember seeing, I think the first camp I went to was when I was in high school, or was it college maybe, where I saw Rob Johnson with the Buffalo Bills, and he was playing. He and Doug Flutie were on the field at the same time. That might have been the first time they came to Rochester, and watching Rob Johnson throw the football, I'm like, what is that? Like, that is not what you want to see from your quarterback out of the gate. Like, you want to see some good passes, right? And then I remember, you know, Bledsoe came in a couple years. I'm like, oh, this is what a quarterback looks like. You know, you're not used to seeing them up close and personal. But yeah, it's funny, you know, just mentioning Paul Posluszny and these players, it just brings back memories. John McCargo, the expectations were so big. I mean, these people are mammoth human beings. It's like, how could you fail? How could you not become a Pro Bowler or an All-Star? You forget that there's other guys that are also, you know, the size of a school bus as well, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, one thing I want to say real quick is, first of all, those are great stories, by the way, and I'm definitely blaming you for what Robert Woods slip. So I never actually watched Rob Johnson like play at all, and I was, my Bills fandom was kind of in its infancy with the Flutie era, and I just remember watching Flutie and I was like, wow, this guy's kind of cool and fun to watch, he's so tiny. and eventually that, you know, kind of snowballed into my real fandom of becoming a Bills fanatic. But my question to you two is, have you seen an NFL player not from the Bills organization, and what was your experience with him, if so?
I don't think that I have.
I don't think that I have either, because my only experiences besides training camp and like, geez, even interviews I've done of other ex-NFL players, I mean, that's not quite the same.
Mm-hmm.
Other teams' players.
We'll put that in the bucket. That's good.
I mean, but it's not in person. So, I mean, mm-hmm. but like, I mean, it's been very positive. Of course, you know, these guys are also, a lot of them are doing their own podcasts and radio shows too. So like, they're super cool and personable. I don't have something like that, but I do remember. So like, can I share this? The first time I ever met a Bills player.
Yeah.
At the time. Now, this is going to age me because I know I'm older than you guys, and that's fine. It is what it is. You guys were into your, which I, by the way, you guys are younger than me. You guys are in your 20s. I give you a ton of credit for just being in your fandom or whatever, like younger than me, whatever. I just turned, I'm not going to say.
I'm in my 20s.
You're your 20s.
I'm not in my 20s.
Just an age anymore. That's cool. That's cool.
I got the baby face.
It was the first time my mom is the reason I'm a Bills fan. So shout out to all the Bills moms out there. She took me to meet, at the time, it was the 90s, and I was like a child. I was like 6 or 7, right? Like, I barely remember. It was Nate Odoms, Cornelius Bennett, Daryl Talley, Leonard Smith, and was it Shane Conlon at the time? It might have been one more person that I'm not remembering at the moment. But, like, these were, like, these guys were, yeah, they were legend. They were over at Marketplace Mall. Mm-hmm. Like, that was at the time when they like had signings there. And I remember being a scared little kid. Like, I'd never been to a signing. I didn't know what to expect. So I brought my Bills hat, my Bills shirt. Like, I had this little pin on my Bills hat. Like, I was a little Buffalo Bills fan, you know, 6-year-old Nate or whatever. So the time comes and they're asking me if I want them to sign the hat. And I was super shy. I was super shy growing up and like even more shy, you know, against like big football players. And I just took my cat. I don't want you to sign my hat. I don't know why. Like, for some reason I thought that like the Sharpie would tarnish it or something. It'd have been worth so much more now, but like, I didn't want they just signed pieces of paper. And I kind of regret that to this day, but like, and I remember meeting Frank Reich. My mom took me to meet him at like a Caldor that existed back in the day, which those don't even exist anymore. So that's,
I was gonna say, what is that?
Exactly. It's like an old, like, it's, I was going to say Ames, but those don't exist anymore. Like those, like, department stores that aren't part of a mall. Right. So it's like a JCPenney.
Oh, okay. But
like a Target now. Like, it's a Target now. Exactly.
Oh, okay.
But those were,
I was waiting for you to throw Kmart in there.
Yeah. I was like, if you said Kmart, I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
It was a step above Kmart. Okay. Let's be honest. No, it was, but yeah. So I don't have a lot of, Justin, do you have any experiences like that with other players of other teams or at least interacting with them? Cause I don't think I would say anything because I'd be like, cause my brother-in-law was like, oh, I saw John Gruden in the airport getting a rental car. I'm like, what'd you say? He's like, nothing. And I gotta say, you know, what am I going to say to him? You know, but anyway, way before the firing. It was like 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Oh, so back when it was cool.
Back when he was cool. Yes. Before everyone hated him.
Yeah.
I have never interacted with anybody outside of the Buffalo Bills. I have been pretty fortunate in my life to have run into a lot of Bills players, just kind of in places that I've worked, Andre Reed, Jim Kelly. And I'm the type of personality where I always go up to these guys and say hi. And if I ruin their day, I ruin their day. I used to work in a restaurant in Buffalo in Shady Cayman.
Oh, wow.
And they saw my eyes light up when I saw Shady, and they stationed one manager at each of the kitchen doors to like make sure I didn't, they're like, he's just trying to enjoy a meal here. He doesn't want to be bothered. So they put a manager at each side of the door so I couldn't go meet Shady. I'm still pretty
just,
upset about
they
that.
They just have like the little window and you just see Justin's eyes just peering.
Oh, ticket times were going through the roof. I stopped selling food. I was trying to find a way out.
Wasn't there? So there was that huge controversy over Shady, like not leaving a tip. Remember that one time? Like, oh, it was when he was a Buffalo Bill or something like that. Or maybe before he was a Buffalo Bill. Obviously would have heard a story if he didn't tip the people that were waiting on him, right?
Yeah, I'm sure I would have heard about it. I was in the kitchen at the time, so that had nothing to do with me. I was just happy that that I was making his food.
What did he order? What does Shady like to eat?
Oh, if I tell you that, I gave away too much.
Nah, come on.
It was a barbecue restaurant, so it was ribs, He got like the family platter thing. So like ribs, chicken, brisket, pork, for all himself? Of it came together. Some sides, cornbread, all that.
For himself.
Oh no, he had people with him. I don't know who they were because I was just looking at Shady.
I only had eyes for him. I couldn't see around. I couldn't see anything else. You know,
I was very distracted.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out. Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
You know, speaking of training camp and seeing people out in the nature, so like I live, like I don't live right next to training camp or anything, but like I live close enough that we share the same Wegmans as the people that are near training camp. Mm-hmm. So one night I was sent out to get groceries. My wife sent me out, and I won't say which player it is because the player's still with the team and I don't want to give it away, but like he was a rookie at the time. And, you know, it's like 9 o'clock on like a Wednesday night, like not a lot of people are at Wegmans in general. And I saw a guy, and of course, without their helmet and number on, sometimes it's hard to put their face with it, but I'm like, I know that guy. I know I've seen him before. So I'm on my phone, like Googling who it is, like who, and so like, I know he's a Bills player. He's wearing like the socks and like the Adidas that like basically are like cleats. Like he looks like he's shorts. Like this guy looks like he just either came from the gym or he's a football player. So I Googled that. I'm like, I know exactly who that is. He was a rookie. And I was like kind of stalking him through the Wegman store because I'm like, what's he eating? Like, what are these guys eating, right? Like, yeah, like around the corner, peeking around the corner, like around the dairy aisle.
Grab a bag of chips, and he just sees like some guy slowly looking by the aisle.
Just grabbing all the same food from behind
same
him.
Food.
Like, okay. I will be a professional athlete.
And yeah, so like I'm curious what's in his cart because what are these guys eating, right? These are guys at the peak. You know, when, why is he even shopping? Like, what does he need to? Don't they have all the food there? So I'm looking in his cart, right? And super cool. You can tell he's also an NFL player too, because he had no idea where he was. Like, he had no idea where in that store he was. So he was not from the area. Mm-hmm. And he'd probably never been to a Wegmans before because he's probably not from Rochester. So he's looking around and I'm like, what's in his cart? And it is full. It is full of things. Like I'm expecting to see like chicken breasts, like whatever you think are the, like the most healthy things, like Brussels sprouts, broccoli, you know, celery. Like, you know, I'm, this mm-hmm. guy's eating lean and mean. And so I come back around like the other way, like just happened to be going by him. And, and
again,
and it is all full of freaking junk food. Like imagine being a 6 year old. Imagine being a 6 year old and getting like $1,000 and you're like, okay, I got peanut butter cups, Reese's peanut butter cups. I got 10 bags of them. I got Starburst. I got, you know, like it was just every candy bar and every piece of junk food. It wasn't even chips. Like it's all candy. That's all he bought. And it's just like one of those carts full of it. I'm like, holy crap, man. And I'm like, he's the one that they sent out.
I was just about to say he was on the rookie duty probably.
Yep. And I had Mike Love on a few years ago and I asked him about that off air. I'm like, is that something they make you guys do? And he's like, oh yeah. He's like, that's something that happens. So, that just so happened to be the rookie that got it that night. Maybe they do it every week. Maybe they do it every month. I have no idea, but I thought that was pretty cool. So, let's get into the conversation about this upcoming season. We're talking a little bit about training camp itself. After the draft, and I know you guys have done an episode since the draft and you guys talked a lot about this, but in my mind, it seems that each and every year seems to be better than the last as far as the top end talent on the team, as far as the depth on the team. And this season seems no different, because I mean, it sucks to lose a couple of the guys. Like, we lost Levi Wallace. We lost Harrison Phillips. We let go of a couple of guys like Darrell Williams, you know? But at the same time, like, we got so many other pieces, and it's hard to argue that a lot of those pieces don't seem like upgrades. And then we had a draft on top of that where we addressed some big needs as well and got some talented depth at that. When you look at this roster, I'll start with you, Andrew, on this one. When you look at this roster and the feelings that you have, is this the best team and roster that you can remember being a Bills fan, or is it just recency bias?
I will say, for me personally, I feel exactly the same way about this team as I did about last year's team going into the offseason. And what I mean by that is expectations are super high. If anything, they're higher this year because, if anything, Josh Allen has proven that he is the real deal. So at this point, we don't necessarily need players, and RIP Cole Beasley, but, like, you know, and we're definitely going to get into that in just a second, because, you know, I love that third and Cole. So
what's not to love about third and Cole?
We got to find a new name for Shakir. So
that was the worst part about Cole Beasley getting cut, by the way. It was just the death of that nickname. So yeah, thanks for bringing it up, though. I'm not over it, but thanks, Andrew.
I was pretty bummed. I was like, damn, I just named my flag football team after this guy, after that nickname. And it just died on a hill right there. But in all seriousness, going back to it, I feel like it's more or less the same. But this season, I feel like the expectations are slightly higher because we have Von Miller on our team. Josh Allen has reaffirmed his elite status as a top tier NFL quarterback. You Google, you YouTube Josh Allen's name, and there's like millions of videos from like content creators like us and people who aren't necessarily Bills fans just talking about Josh Allen and his elite level of play, which is something that I never thought would happen in my younger Bills fandemonium, because it's just like, you know, I like when we drafted EJ Manuel, I was optimistic about it, but in my head, I was like, I don't know if he's the guy. And I was definitely right about it. Same thing with Kyle Warren. I was like, I don't know if he's the guy, but I think I like him more than EJ Manuel. Then he goes and retires on us. And then, you know, those seasons, subsequent seasons after that, I was like, I don't really have a lot of, you know, true optimism for at least the quarterback position. And then we get this guy, Josh Allen, in the draft. And I have receipts to prove it, where I was like, I kind of want this Josh Allen guy over like a Rosen or Darnold. If anything, I guess if anything, Josh Allen, maybe Sam Darnold after that, maybe. And I also wanted Lamar Jackson too. So I was like, if we can get Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, I'm cool with it. And then if we can't get those two, I guess Sam Darnold. And it turns out I was sitting pretty with my
right up both of them so far. I mean, let's be honest, like, you're a better talent evaluator than most of the GMs out there at this point.
I just didn't want Baker Mayfield simply because I thought he's a little arrogant, just a little bit, you know, but like in a passionate way. So Justin has the best take in that quarterback draft, but I'll let him talk about that in a second. But to answer your question again, I said it's the same, but realistically, yes, I have higher expectations this year than last year.
I'll have to say that I did not want Josh Allen. I was firmly planted in Josh Rosen. I was making anybody that would listen to me talk watch the Josh Rosen film. I'll put that in air quotes.
The Chosen Rosen.
I mean, we're talking... This was like when I was really getting into the draft and thought I knew what I was talking about. Josh Rosen also bears a striking resemblance to me, just, you know, like a foot taller and an actual athlete.
You were just trying to live vicariously through Josh Rosen.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe if I get some lifts in my shoe, I can sneak onto the sideline for a few minutes before somebody knows what's going on.
Yeah, before you met your now fiance, you were hoping that would be like the let in to be like a guy that looks like a star quarterback, right? Like, yeah, you might be able to meet a woman that way. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, you guys got me. I'm not Josh Rosen, but do you want me to run out and get the tee after the kickoff? I'll do that too. I just want to be part of it.
Yeah.
But to answer the original question, I'd have to say that yes, this is the best roster I can ever remember seeing. Obviously adding Von Miller to what was already the number one rated defense is kind of mind blowing still. Until I actually like see him play in a game, it still doesn't feel real to me. The only thing that I'm going to miss Cole Beasley. I was sad to see him go. I really liked what he brought to the table for Allen's development and bringing him in with John Brown. It really was like the logical progression and steps that really helped Josh Allen get to where he is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Allen's kind of gotten to the point where
he doesn't need someone like that.
Right. He doesn't need those people building him up now. He can build people up. So I think we're okay in that department. The biggest thing that I was upset about, and I think this kind of went hand in hand with the McKissick deal, no deal thing there, is I kind of wish that, especially seeing the contract that he ended up getting, I wish Levi Wallace was still on this team, even if it was just for one more year, for some competition. I'm happy that I feel like it was part of the plan to move on from him and kind of force the hand to put the big investment into Kyir Elam. And the high investment in cornerback is something I've been calling for years. But with where this team is at in the legit Super Bowl window that we're in, I kind of would have liked to see them at least maintain the floor of knowing what you have in Levi Wallace. And if you draft a guy like Elam and he beats him straight up in training camp, fine. Then you have a really high... You have a highly regarded backup playing behind him. You have somebody to fill in while Trey White is out. If he's out, I kind of wish that they maintain that floor, especially seeing he only got $4 million. That's hindsight right there. So
I like that idea, but I'm going to push back slightly in the fact that if you draft, this is the same reason why they didn't draft a quarterback until really late last year when Rashad Wild Goose, like Brandon Bean was like saying, oh, you know, we definitely had cornerback on our big board, but the value wasn't right. And if we reached on a cornerback, let's say in the second or the third, and they couldn't beat out Levi or Dane Jackson, who were an undrafted free agent and then respectfully a sixth or seventh round pick in Dane Jackson, people are just going to scratch their heads like, why do we just reach on this cornerback who's a second or third round pick and they're on the bench and an undrafted free agent and a seventh round pick is ahead of them? So like that's something that I would scratch my head at. You look at Noah Igbinoghu, I think, from the Dolphins. There was like games last year where he was just a healthy scratch and he was a first round pick for them. Like that would make me upset if I was a Dolphins fan, just to see one of my first round picks when they had three of them just to sit on the bench. Like, oof.
So I can't disagree with you on that front, but that to me is kind of like a scared mentality and like an optic standpoint for Brandon Bean and the Bills to deal with.
What?
I'm speaking with my fan goggles on here of like, yeah, I want that. We brought in so many people to compete with Levi Wallace and take the job. And it was always this kind of like half-hearted attempt. You're talking late stages of his career, Josh Norman, Kevin Johnson,
EJ Gaines,
Vontae Davis. Like, you brought in all these people for quote unquote Vontae competition. And yeah, Levi Wallace kept beating these guys out and hell,
to be fair, he didn't beat Vontae Davis.
Vontae Davis beat himself. Yeah, but it's just an investment that I wanted to see. And I don't think we would have taken a first-round cornerback if Levi was still here. So I think it's kind of a moot point. So I guess it's kind of wanting to have my cake and eat it too. I wanted the big investment playing opposite Trey White, but I also wanted to maintain the floor. So maybe we still see a move there, bring in like a Joe Hayden or something like that, just to kind of reestablish where the floor is right now. We'll see what happens there.
I like what you both said, because in a vacuum, I like having Levi Wallace as depth at the cornerback spot, because what I want him definitely as my CB2. Like, no, I'd always wanted somebody that has a little bit more athletic ability. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody like a Kaiir Elam, right? Like a guy like that. But I also want like I like having Dane Jackson as depth as opposed to needing him as a starter. But, you know, having him as depth, like, I'm fine with. I like that idea. I would feel a lot better with Levi Wallace as my depth and a potential competitor as well. I'd be also worried, though, that they'd stick with Levi just because he knows the playbook better, as opposed to letting the rookie get his licks. And in the grand scheme of things, it'd be better to start him early, because I think the Bills coaching staff has for good reasons. Like, they're worried about rookies hitting the rookie wall. Like, they don't start rookies right away unless they absolutely have to, unless they definitely outplay their counterparts. But yeah, I'd be perfectly fine if they do bring in a Joe Hayden as well. That was one of the few areas where I think that they do kind of lack a little bit of depth, for sure. Mm-hmm. Rashad Wild Goose got poached off our squad last year because of, and so it sucks that we don't have him now as more depth.
And a cool name.
Yeah. And one of the best names. Great name. Mm-hmm. Elite level name. His play may never be elite, but his name certainly was. The name only is on a bus, like, not his face. Like, it's just name.
Just legit. Just the inscription of like his name on the back of a jersey. Just from the shoulder down.
He's from the shoulder down. No head. Don't even give his
style goose.
We don't even know what number he was.
Even know what number. Don't see any of his neck. Just the nameplate. What other names would go into Canton just based on the name alone? Like Dick Butkus. Like, I know he's a Hall of Fame actual player, but man, that's a strong name right there. Mm-hmm. Geez, there's some good ones I can't think of.
I'm pretty sure there's someone named Smoke Monday. Like, oh, that's sick. That's a pretty cool name.
Smoke Monday came out in the I think he was in the later rounds of the draft this year.
There are some really, really cool names, and it makes me think to myself, like, damn, I just got Andrew. Like, what the hell?
Like, I know, that's like literally the worst name in the world. I understand what you mean by that.
No, like, geez, mom, thanks. Jeez.
Real clever.
It's funny. Here's something that, you know, the expectations are high. This is a good group of players. Like, even Levi Wallace, like, I agree, but like, we're even kind of like cherry picking, because that's not a huge need, but it would be nice to have more depth if you're looking at different positions. Cause like, we have punter depth that we've never had before, kicker depth, I guess you could say, because our punter, who we think at least will be the punter, you know, week one, in Matt Reza, is like, he kicked at San Diego State too. So we have a backup kicker, which we've never had before as well. So like, this is crazy depth. So appreciate you guys coming on. Obviously, Justin, Andrew, like, you know, big fans of your work over there at The Wandering Buffalo. So they can find your work at The Wandering Buffalo, which you can find on all podcast platforms and YouTube. They can find you under the Buffalo Fan Base, the Official Bills Mafia Podcast Network. True, I believe, under their YouTube channel as well. Where else can they find you socially? Where else can they find your work? Where can they find you anywhere that that they might not know where you guys are?
Justin, you can go first.
I'm on any social medias at JGods22. I guess I'm not very new to Twitter anymore. It's been a couple of years now, but I'm not great with Twitter, but I'm working on it. So you can find me at Twitter mostly.
You can find me on social media by searching up Two Jangs.
Well, this was a lot of fun. Like, honestly, like, I'd been meaning to have you guys on, and I'm glad, like, even Justice, now you're working with Justice and stuff like that, it's even a better reason to have you guys on. You guys are doing a great job over there, you know, at the Buffalo fan base, you know, site and their YouTube channel and, you know, their podcast channel and everything like that. And it's cool to see, you know, other members of this society, of this, you know, this brotherhood almost of content creation, like, continue to have success. So I'm glad that we could do this, and I'm really glad to have you guys on.
Yeah, thanks for having us, man. Really appreciate
it. Thanks again for having us.
Yeah. So we'll have to do this again sometime. I'm not gonna do it. It's funny. I did this last time. Justice gave me a Go Bills. I was not expecting it whatsoever. He's the man. So I'm gonna try this again because I know you guys have both listened to it. So I'll do this respectfully and formally. So signing off for Andrew.
Go Bills.
And for Justin.
As always, go Bills.
And for me, Nate, go Bills. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you guys again next week.
Thank you for listening to the Circling the Wagons podcast. Download and subscribe to us in your favorite podcast service. Email us at ctwpod@gmail.com. That's Charlie Tango Whiskey Pod @gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter @ctwpod. And most importantly, go Bills!
Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills.
Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills, mate.